What's up, everyone? Welcome to Narrative Calculus, the podcast show where we analyze everything from movies to TV shows, books, musicals, and everything in between. I'm Jonathan, a filmmaker, and this is...
Terrible Tie, a wannabe writer. And Jonathan did not edit out my name in the last episode. You think I didn't notice that, huh? I'm gonna be
suing.
Yeah,
I was hoping you wouldn't. So.
What? You knew, and you just ignored it? Dude!
Okay, guys, I might be fired in the next few minutes, so don't be surprised if it just turns into the Terrible Tie podcast. But I might as well go out with the bang. His name is...
What?
Okay, well, anyway. Today we're reviewing the second Diary of a Wimpy Kid movie. If you want to check out our last episode, it's in the description below, or at least it should be.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid 2 starts out almost making you think that it's gonna be better than the original, and to an extent it does manage to do that, but unfortunately it can't quite get away from its book roots. They aren't willing to drop aspects of the book stuff that unfortunately just don't translate over very well to movie format, which is my main problem with the film, and we'll get into that in a little bit.
I thought this one was quite a bit better than the original. I think the plot's a lot tighter, and I like the development in the characters, especially in Greg and Roger's relationship. I think it's a lot more meaningful, and the sacrifice from Greg's a lot greater in the second one. I think it's good that he has a motivating goal this time, other than just quote-unquote being popular. The performances are amazing, as always, and yeah, that's about everything I have to say on this film. So this movie opens with Greg now being in 7th grade, which sounds a lot better than 6th grader, right, Ty?
I wouldn't know. I don't know how grades work.
Yeah, he's homeschooled. So,
homeschooled? I'm the young child prodigy who was kicked out, man. That's my rule. I was kicked out of school because I was moving too quickly for it.
Moving too quickly for it, okay. Yeah, I don't know about that one. But, so, he sees this new girl, Holly Hills, skating around, and shenanigans happen basically with him and his brother, and it's funny, his brother like tracks his eyeline as he watches her skating down the rink, and he says, oh, that'll never happen, there is no way that girl will ever talk to you. He attempts to ask her to dance, but right as he's about to make his move, shoot a shot, as they say, Roderick turns off the slow dancing music and turns on his heavy metal, That's just heavy metal music, I guess. And that kind of shows you what's in, little fight.
But the most amazing scene happens after that, where his mom runs up to the DJ station, halts everything, and yells out through the speaker, honey, Greg, stay right there. Stay right there. Your dad is coming to get you. Just stay calm.
And Greg is not very happy with this, and so when he sees Roderick again, he takes a few swings, misses, and ends up in a 7-year-old's birthday cake, which doesn't end too well. And after that, his mom introduces this new form of currency, basically Monopoly money, called Mom Bucks. And the thing I don't understand about that is, in the book, a Mom Buck is worth like a cent or 10 cents or something like that. But if each Mom Buck is worth a dollar, why doesn't she just outright give them a dollar?
And that is one of the mysteries that we will never know this show. Although I appreciate Roderick's, Roderick has his priorities straight. As soon as they find out about it, he's like, can I cash out? Well, honey, you should probably...
I want to cash out. But
I want to cash out. Hold on. Dude's got the right... Oh, jeez. Just banged my microphone.
in the books, what happens, though, is he just buys some magazines at the convenience store. But I think here it's implied that he uses them to buy a bunch of board games of that same game at thrift shops. So, basically, he's like a millionaire in Mom Bucks. Yeah. So, that's actually...
Unfortunately, it's like he's got millions, but they're in like real estate, and he just cannot liquidate them fast enough.
Yeah,
I think this is what they call fraud. This is the household domestic version of fraud. Currency. What's it called? counterfeit currency. He's going to jail for that one. Mom jail.
So Greg goes back to school and, you know, not much happens there. And then he finds out about the talent show and Roger really wants to be in it with his band Loaded Diaper, which is quite possibly the greatest band ever to walk the earth. I mean, their songs are just, I'm not even being funny with this. Like, seriously, their songs are really good. Like, Exploded Diaper quite possibly one of the greatest achievements of
the past century. Dude, save it for the music section.
100 years ago.
Save it for the music section, man. We'll get into the 21st century has never seen such complexity, yet a combination of... Dang it, I'm letting it get away from me. We gotta move forward, man.
Okay, so after that...
Guys, something just happened. I felt the world shift, as if there was a long silence. And then Jonathan had to do something, but then it was all just edited out, as if by magic. Post-production magic.
Okay, so afterwards, Greg, and this is the point in the movie where the plot kind of veers off track a bit, because, I mean, it is a lot tighter than the last movie. There's more unity, there's more coherence in what goes on.
Yeah, I can
but
agree with that 100%.
There are more time, there are also the occasional slip-ups where they just let random plot developments happen here and there. And we're coming up on one now, because Greg basically tries to become an internet sensation by, videotaping Rowley falling over in a chair with underwear on his head.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably the level of quality that internet humor is right now. So, I mean, I can't say it was too far off the mark, but, yeah, so he does that. You just randomly scream there, okay, but...
No,
so
I, he does, I was, he does I'm yelling that... out about that burn that you went against all the...
Okay, yeah. And so he does that, but Rowley ends up sitting on a present that Greg's little brother gave to him, which was a tinfoil ball full of spikes. I don't know if that was supposed to be a peace offering or a torture weapon. It looks like it could be an instrument of torture. It looks like it could be either. And after that, the plot then moves on to church, where Greg accidentally sits on chocolate candy bar, and you can imagine what that would look like, and he sees Holly Hills and refuses to go to church, but has to anyway. That's actually something really interesting. I wanted to highlight that, because, like, what's been happening a lot these days is, like, people don't really attend church that much anymore. You know, they just go to soccer games, or they have, you know, they just stay home and just sleep in. That, I mean, I feel like I've seen that happening a lot these days, and it's kind of funny to see just how much, like, things have changed from, like, 10 years, because, like, even a non-Christian company, like, saw that one of the things that most families do was go to church, and that's something you don't skip, that's something you don't just push off to the side, just because people saw it as important. And I just think that's pretty interesting. But moving on, so his mom gives him a sweater, a pink and flower sweater, to put around his waist, and Roderick steps on it, revealing his stain, I guess we'll call it, to the entire church congregation. He takes a fingerful and says, it's chocolate, see, and he puts it on his tongue, and yeah, we don't need to go any more detail into that. And Mrs. Happily is extremely embarrassed. Does your mom ever do that too? Because my mom does that, and I was wondering, so, and even in the audience, what my mom does is, like, something will happen, and she'll, like, bring it up at random moments for, like, no reason, and just be, like, thinking about it, and then start, like, you know, scolding you or yelling at you for something you did, like, a week ago, and you're like, okay, like, why are we thinking about this now? It has no connection to what's going on in the moment. It just randomly come to your mind. Does your mom ever do that?
No.
No?
No. Well, I mean, sometimes she does it as, like, a joke, like, as a running joke over some, like, you know, I'm never letting this one down on you, buddy. You're going to hear about this for the rest of your adult life. But, it's not random. It's very much deliberate.
Okay. Roderick, after that, they're banned from going to a vacation to Waterworld with their family, and they have to stay home and resolve their differences. Roderick decides to throw a party. He locks Greg in the basement, but then his mother calls and he's forced to bring him back up, and Greg's told not to get in his way. Nerds. Yeah.
Nice.
And basically they have a great time at the party, but they're coming home an hour early, so I have to clean up the house really quick. Then basically from that point on, it's Roderick and Greg getting along really well. Roderick gives him a bunch of tips on life, I guess. Like,
You're
which are
being
actually
very
really great. Like,
gracious. You're being very
always like
gracious.
always lower mom and dad's expectations. Like, I thought I flunked a math test, but I got a C. That's like, don't be good at something you don't want to do, and never do something if someone else can do it for you. Just those could be in the Proverbs. Like, I bet you that's what Solomon was thinking when he wrote the Proverbs.
Yeah, lower your parents' expectations. I guess that was somewhere in between the cherish your mother and father part. Yeah.
Yeah, and he gets laughed at by the girl Holly when Roderick accidentally gives him his paper that he wrote himself, under the assumption, Greg's under the assumption that his dad wrote it, a paper called 100 Years Ago, which goes something like,
Oh
so
God.
something about cavemen,
Oh, that
books and
was
humans weren't around 100
oh.
years ago. Spiders ruled the earth 100 years ago, apparently, and deserts were filled with snow. Yeah, I don't know where he got that information from, but he gets laughed at by Holly. They found out about the party. His parents find out about the
I
party,
don't blame
which
him about
basically.
the I don't blame him about the 100 years thing though. Like I probably would have given them a paper on the rise of postmodernism, and I would have gotten the exact same reaction. So I actually sympathize with Greg Heffley there.
So basically, what happens after that is her family finds out about the party, and Greg spilled the beans to his mom, but Roderick didn't know. And so Roderick's now upset with Greg and trying to ruin his life. He meets Holly Hills at the retirement home, which is fate or destiny or whatever. And his luck has finally changed. They go to the talent show. Roderick is not allowed to play because of the party. But then Rowley
By the way, can
is
we just
trying to
comment
do
on
him.
something? How much would you have to hate your own child to force them to go to a talent show that they've been wanting to go to for like several months? After you punish them, you force them to sit there and watch as like all the, that is unbelievably cruel. Like that is just taking, that's just rubbing salt in the wound. It is. I don't, and you know, I was going to bring it up later, but I might as well now. Like, I don't blame Greg or Roderick with parents like that. Like, these are, this, that is just horrible. Holy cow.
I didn't see it quite that bad. Like, I don't know, like, I understand their parents saying going to support the community, you know?
Well, then they go, but don't force the older teenager to sit there and watch as his dreams are floated away into, like,
By the way, was that when they were singing the one song from Cats? Is that why Roderick was crying, because he couldn't play? And the
yes,
song was kind of reflecting
he
that?
sympathized with the he sympathized with it. Yes, that's what I was thinking too.
Yeah. That scene's just a little, has always been a bit of a mystery to me. I don't understand. Like, at first I thought he was just crying because the song was so beautiful. Like, not today, but like, I've been watching this movie for many, many years, and the first couple of years I thought that was why. I kind of figured out it was because he was sad because he couldn't play, but I don't know, never quite fully sure. So he's able to play because Greg helps out Rowley in the magic act, and basically his relationship with his brother is resolved. His relationship with Holly is resolved, and everything ends with a nice bow on it.
Yeah, can I just say something? I'm telling you, man, everybody in this movie is psychopaths. Like everybody is horrible in this movie.
What do you
Just,
mean?
I guess that's just what normal children are like, and adults.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, so if we're just about done with that, you want to start with the characters, and if you have any change of heart on Greg in this movie from the
But
last one?
I I do think slightly better of him. Oh, well, for about 5 minutes I did. I thought it was cool that he was finally being friendly and at least a little bit supportive of Rowley. A little bit. But did you notice that, like, when he started fantasizing about getting together with Holly Hill, he was thinking about how popular he would be if he had a girl like Holly Hill? But he does he think of her as like a trophy girl or something? Is that what's going on here?
I think it's more like he would have to be really cool to get with a girl like Holly Hills.
I don't know, man. It really seemed to me like he was thinking to himself, how cool would I look with a girl like this hanging off of me? Which is just incredibly sociopathic for a 12-year-old to do, and just very messed up.
Just because he's a 12-year-old?
Well, like, how does he even have those thoughts at that age? Why is he thinking of that? Like, I would
Of
expect this
what?
from of getting a trophy girl to hang off his arms. Like, that's something I would expect from like a 30-year-old, angry businessman, not from a 12-year-old child. Jeez. What am I wrong here?
So,
Do normal children have that thought going through their heads when they're looking for a girlfriend? Jeez.
dude, when a guy's looking for a girlfriend, I don't think there's many thoughts going through his head.
That seemed to be Greg's thoughts, though. Whoa, what's going on? The atmosphere feels off
Do you have
right now.
anything else to say about Greg?
Well, I do have one comment. Is there even a character arc for this guy? And I just wanted to double check because I really didn't see much of one. And we actually talked about this a little bit before the podcast started. And I think you should share your thoughts on that if.
I think that there's not a character arc per se in something that he has to overcome in himself, which is something that happened in the first movie. But I think there is I think there is a struggle that he has, which I'm not sure if you'd call that the same thing as a character arc, but he has like this struggle to be able to get along with his brother and to not, get beat up by him, which is what happens most of the time as we're seeing. But I think that, yeah, nothing inside of him has to change. But basically, just his relationship with his brother is the way I see it. But I do think that's enough to carry the movie because in the first one, it was enough to, see him, at least at the end, growing as a person. But now we can see basically his relationship with his brother growing. So it's different than the first one, but I don't necessarily see it as bad. I mean, what do you think of it?
Before we continue, I just want to clarify to everybody what the difference between no character arc and a flat character arc is. Because I see the term sometimes mixed up, especially in movies like these. A flat character arc is one where the character's value or trait that's being talked about in the movie is either strengthened or remains the same after adversity with the world around them. For example, think of the James Bond movies with the hero who wants to do XYZ, right, because of some deep value within him. He doesn't, it's not like he has a flaw already that needs to be fixed. It's that the values that he already holds are being tested in the outer world. And sometimes that acts as a catalyst for other characters who have their own character arc. In this case, though, what we're talking about is no character arc. There aren't any values that are being changed or tested. There isn't some belief that Greg holds on to that needs to be, or at least not one that's very prevalent within the story. Now, as to the question of whether or not that carries a story, I would say, generally speaking, I do think there needs to be some kind of character arc, just because the story is almost never strong enough to be carried without it. There are exceptions, though. For example, in some of the most hardcore of hardcore action movies, and like certain comedies, the characters don't have any values. There are certain books that are designed philosophically where they have a passive character who never has his values tested. I would argue this movie fulfills none of the above. I don't think there was anything to lose from putting in a character arc. All it would have done was strengthen the story. And I don't, while I don't think that they lost anything as a result of not putting it in, it is just a massive wasted opportunity, and it could have made the show significantly better.
I see what you mean.
Okay.
I see what you mean. I do agree. You know, obviously, I think it still holds up with that one, but I do think it would have definitely...
And I, to a certain extent, I would agree with you in that the external story is still strong. It just could have been a lot stronger had they added in a character.
Yeah.
There could have been a lot more power to it, even in something as lighthearted as this.
Yeah, I see what you mean. But, so talking about his values just here for a second, I think that we also, like, at the end, we get kind of, like, not a redemptive moment, but, like, a chance for, like, Greg to kind of, like, prove his good heart by, like, being willing to, even after Roderick was, like, totally awful to him, made him, like, run around the hotel in his underwear and then tape him doing it, and then almost giving Holly his diary, which was filled with stuff about her. Even after all that, he's still empathetic toward his brother in that he's willing to sacrifice his
pride,
what would you call it? Pride, dignity in front of Holly Hills, so that his brother can play, and not because he's nice to him, or not because he gives him tips, but because that's all been thrown out the window at this point, but just because he's his brother. You know what I mean? I mean, that's really it. Just,
and that would have been
it. Really shows you how much he's changed from that, from the previous movie to this one. And they highlight that, and it's pretty emotional, because, you know? So, okay, what were you going to say?
I think it could have made for a great cap, a great ending to the story. My main problem is that There doesn't seem to be much of a contrast between him. There isn't anything to contrast that in the first and second act, where he acts like, I suppose one could argue that him trying to get back at his brother is him putting his own interests ahead of his brother's. But like, I mean, come on, like that seems really minor. What about when he, let's see, when his mom, when he basically sold out his brother to his mom? Like, I mean, does that really count either? Because, like, he did manage to salvage it to a certain extent, and he was repentant of it. He was sorry that he had bailed. So it's like, it just doesn't feel, on its own, it's a good scene, but without any of the preceding moments to back it up, it just comes off as a little bit half-hearted. If he had done something truly, like, really, really awful to his brother, like, way off in the beginning, then that ending would have been really meaningful, but...
I see it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about everything I have. Greg, you wanna go on to Roderick?
Gosh, what a dude. He is truly the ideal teenager. I think we all aspire to be like Roderick in one way or another. Those of
exactly,
us who are younger
exactly.
than 18.
That's, yeah. I mean, yeah, he's just about, he's practically perfect in every way.
I'm not sure I would go that far.
Yeah. I don't know, I really like the sequences in this film with him and Greg. And if someone does have a character arc, it's Roderick.
I do agree with that. I think Roderick's character arc, you don't notice it because Greg completely overshadows him, but Roderick does have something of a character arc.
Yeah. So in the beginning, we see him, like, you know, seeing Greg likes Holly, and I just love how he, like, tracks Greg's eyeline throughout to see Holly. I don't know, I just thought that was, I think that's just the funniest thing. But he basically ruins any chance he had with Holly right there and completely humiliates Greg.
Right, and you know that's...
And he even after Greg thinks he's, like, getting along better with his brother, Roderick locks him in the basement, like, with no hope of getting out for, like, the whole night. So we can see that he's not any better in the beginning of the film. But then we see later he progresses. We see him, like, saying, you know, you're not half as lame as I thought you were, and giving him brotherly wisdom. And you can really see this change when, like, he says, like, tons of girls are into me and they don't show it, you know. I bet she really likes you. Like, at that point, I'm just thinking, wow, he's, like, this dude is totally changed. You know what I mean? And
What?
like he
And
just has
that,
a
yeah,
complete change of heart.
exactly.
But then you also see, but then you also see later when he feels like that Greg has like, sold him out, and he feels betrayed by him. You can see that he's very hurt by it, and he goes back to doing the one thing that he always did, which is,
Well, and he doubles down though. Like at least before it didn't have any long term, super, super long term consequences. Here though, it's like it's really petty and it's really mean and it's really over the top compared to before.
Wait, what is?
Well, how Roderick tries to get back at Greg, after Greg sells him
Oh
out.
yeah, right, yeah. Yeah.
He constantly tries to step on his shoes. And like it and you can tell that he's just absolutely doing anything he can to ruin his little brother's life, right?
But I mean, when you think about it, like to Roderick, this was like the so drumming is the most important thing in the world to Roderick, right? And this is like a way in which he can like start becoming successful at the one thing he cares about in the entire world. So, I mean,
I'm not like Matt. I'm saying like it just shows how well developed his character is. Like that's what I mean. I'm not like going after him or anything.
oh, okay.
Like and another thing, you mentioned earlier at the beginning how he totally destroys Greg through that whole sequence with his mom and sabotaging his attempts to get with Holly Hill. Like And then at the very end, when he has this opportunity to hold stuff over Greg, right, with that, he has a videotape of Greg running naked through the hotel lobby. But he gives him the video and is like, and drives him from school, and it's a really good moment. It's really cool.
Yeah, it is.
Because it really
That's the other
shows how
thing
much he
too.
changed.
A lot of the emotional beats in this movie, unlike some of the other ones, like they really hit. I mean, you gotta admit that a lot of the like when the movie wants you to feel something, like I think they really succeeded in making you feel it,
They
even if
did.
it's like
And it's a shame 'cause they could have made it so much better, but
And the other thing is, I'm glad they didn't do what they did in the first movie. And since, the first movie was about Greg's relationship with Rowley, this one's about his relationship with Roderick, it would have been easy just to make him a plot device. But they didn't.
They tried to
And
really
that's,
deepen him.
yeah. So I think that's one of the ways this movie really differentiates itself from the first one. Okay,
Oh, and
Mom and
one thing I
Dad.
wanted to note about Roderick's character. Oftentimes on the show, we often say, well, he was a side character, so if he had been a main character, I would have thought that his character arc was lacking. But since he's a side character, it's perfectly. I just want to mention, I legitimately think had he been the main character of this film, like I would have been A-okay with keeping his character arc the same as it was. Because it was legitimately just that well made. I legitimately enjoyed it that much. It was that good.
The mom gets a little bit more development in this one. We see that she's a news reporter, column person. I don't know how to say it. But, I don't know. We just get a little bit more backstory, and we see that what she really wants is just her sons to get along. And, yeah. I don't know. I guess that's all I have to say about her. What do you think? Great dancing, though. Great dance moves. She's the second mom of the series to bust out the moves when the right song came out.
I'm starting to think that the author of this series may have had like some kind of traumatic childhood involving lots of
Dancing
mommy
moves.
son dance off things for some reason. That seems to be my only conclusion. But I mean, good. Okay.
The father, obviously his performance is amazing. He's hilarious the whole time. I love like so many moments with him, like while the mom's dancing, he's trying not to be seen with her. And like I love how like the mother says, "Your father and I have been talking," and he just has a super confused look at his face. And then she says, like, "Your being a brother is one of the most important relationships of your life," and he just laughs at that. And there's one joke in the film where they're watching a romantic comedy, probably. I don't know what it is. And she says, and he says, "What's going on?" She's like, "He picked the housekeeper." He says, "He picked the housekeeper of the supermodel," and she's nodding while just sobbing. And he just starts like doing all he can to keep from bursting out laughing.
I mean, like, practically speaking, though. I mean, practically speaking, how much of a relationship can you expect with a supermodel? It actually makes more sense long term to go for the housekeeper, generally speaking.
What?
Well,
Wait, what are you talking about? Explain.
I mean, I say what I mean, and I mean what I say.
Well, what have you said, and what does it mean?
I mean, like, in the romantic comedies, he's making fun of the fact that the dude went for the housekeeper instead of the supermodel. But, like, realistically, a supermodel has, like, a job, a really stressful, high-stress job, where she's constantly being invited by, like, bombarded by offers from billionaires and millionaires, most likely. I'd say the housekeeper is a far better option.
Okay, guys, Ty has officially lost his marbles. That's a joke from the movie, by the way. Oh, that's another good one. And everyone's trying to make me feel like I was losing my mind.
Yes. Okay,
Yeah.
let's explain this one for a second. This is probably
Okay.
again, like, we're gonna go into it more on the miscellaneous section, but the humor in this, I have to give it, is just absolutely, it's just hilarious. There is this brilliant scene. There's this running gag where, like, they messed up the door, so they had to replace it. But it's the bathroom door, and it doesn't have a lock. And so, like, they have to, they're like walking on, they're trying to gaslight everybody into believing that that there's never been a lock on the door. It's amazing. Like, wasn't there a lock on this door? No, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, if
I
there
must
was.
be losing my marbles. Yeah. It's like the mom says, like, Roger, I've been to this door 10,000 times. I knew there was a lock on it. He's like, trust me, there's never been a lock on it. Greg's walked in on me like a million times, and if there was a lock, I would use it. In fact, why don't you put one on?
Yes, that was perfect. That was amazing. Like.
Yeah. Okay. I guess the last two characters are. Oh, Holly. Okay. I was just thinking that we had like something to go on there, but we don't. Anything about Holly? She's kind of like
She's there.
Greg's inspiration to being a. Not inspiration, but she's
Greg's
like
potential trophy
relates.
girlfriend.
No, she like relates to like his plight in being a middle child, and.
Ah, yes, the difficulties of being a middle child.
Okay,
I don't know where I was going with that.
Bill, was another character who was pretty funny, and
He was there?
yeah, he gets fired.
Well, that's the world of rock and roll, baby.
I think that's just about it. I mean, there's Rowley, but again, he's just there. So why don't we talk about the plot? The plot is much better than the last one.
Oh no.
So,
Uh-oh.
what? What is it?
Well, just you say that the plot was much better, like, oh, I can already see where this is going, my man.
So basically, there's two plot lines going throughout the film. There's one, Greg trying to have a reasonable relationship with his brother, and Greg trying to get with Holly Hills. And the way that they like relate to each other are actually really clever. Like, it's not like one. It's not like, you know, I don't think there was a B plot in the first Diary of a Wimpy Kid movie. Was there? Was there a B
I
plot in
don't
that
think
movie?
so.
I don't
Well,
think
there
so.
might have been,
Yeah.
but it was overshadowed by the amount of C plots and D plots
Yeah.
and E plots.
Yeah. So, but in this one, they're able to actually handle these two storylines really well, make them connect well. So, in the beginning, obviously, his attempts to talk to Holly Hills are sabotaged by Roderick, and at the end, his relationship with Holly is I don't know how to explain it well. Okay, so what happens is that Greg takes his brother's history paper called 100 Years Ago, and he gives it gives a talk in front of the entire class, and Holly Hills laughs at him, and so he finds consolation with his brother. But then later, when his relationship with his brother is going awful, he sees Holly Hills, and he finds consolation in her, and like to in his brother's relationship. And there's just so many times throughout the film where one the A plot affects the B plot or vice versa, and they both feel super essential, which I think is something that they did a lot better than the last film.
I will say they interconnected, but from a plot perspective, the Holly Hill plot did not move at all. There was zero direction. There was no arc going on whatsoever with the Holly Hill. They affected each other, sure, but it could have used some more polish.
Yeah. I think they go more in depth than that in the next movie. Yeah. The next movie definitely has a lot more Holly in it.
So, you want to go?
Oh, yeah, I just have one more thing. I also think they did a great job bringing Greg to his lowest point in the film, like at his grandparents' house, because at that point, and it makes it a lot more satisfying in the end to see everything work out well, because at that point, Greg, Holly thinks that he's Fragly, for whatever reason, Greg or Frag or whatever, and Roderick absolutely hates him, and so, like, seeing him at that low point, and then seeing the first plot point being resolved with Holly Hills, and then his relationship with his brother at the end, just makes it a lot more impactful, you know? Like, I remember we were talking about, like, you have to, like, bring the character to its, like, to their lowest point at, like, the end of the second act, and then, you know, have the big conclusion at the end, and I think that they were able to pull that off really well, and it makes the end a lot more interesting. What'd you think of that?
I agree, they did start to hit their stride past around the midpoint, but everything prior to that was pretty, the first act is basically non-existent. There is no first act, there is no establishing act to prepare us for the rules, show the character in their natural state, that doesn't exist. And that links back to what we were talking about with character, where there's nothing to set up the resolution. There's the goal that our hero is chasing is established in about 5 minutes, namely getting Holly Hill / overcoming Roderick, and both of those are so abstract as to be pretty much useless from a plot perspective. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. Another thing. So I think the party sequence is a great way to work in the relationship into the plot in a meaningful way. And I like
Did you hear what I was saying earlier, or did I cut out?
No, I heard it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I think it was a great way to establish, like how much, I like the shift that happens there. Like at the beginning of the party, he still pretty much hates Greg, but at the end we see their conflict resolved. And I think seeing the progression of their relationship to having to clean up the whole party mess together and then going out, I think the party was a great way to kind of, keep that forward momentum in their relationship going. And I thought they did a really great job with that. The talent show, I think, was a really good idea from a plot perspective. I think it was a good way to establish, something that Roderick really wanted. And it was really clever of them to have that be the thing that kind of tears them apart. Because after the party goes awry, after the party gets exposed, which is Greg's fault, then Roderick isn't allowed to play the talent show, which is the one thing that he's wanted basically this whole time. And that's been set up during the whole rest of the movie. And they did a good job setting that up in the beginning, too. I will give them that. So I think that the talent show and the party were two really great ways they kept the plot moving. But do you have any thoughts on that?
I think the talent show, there was a lot of wasted potential there for me. I thought the talent show could have been excellent as like a primary driving objective. Greg could have realized that the talent show was a way for him to mend his relationship with his brother, like from the very start. Maybe that could have linked in with Holly Hill's subplot somehow. But for most of the film, that's pretty much unused as a primary objective.
Yeah. Lastly, I think that the Oh, I guess that's it. Do you have anything else for the plot?
I wanted to mention in regards to character, and I guess this interacts with theme as well. Part of the problem with the subplot for me, and part of the reason why I think the subplot falls flat, is I didn't see anything really unifying character or theme-wise to unite the plots together. Like, if there had been a common thread, like, for example, let's say Holly Hill realizes how much of a selfish, sociopath Greg Heffley is, right? And, like, just drops their friendship like a hot rock. And so when Greg throws his dignity out the window to help his brother, then that mends the relationship with Holly at the same time. We get none of that. Instead, there is no discernible. Yeah.
I thought Greg was a sociopath in this movie.
He comes pretty darn close. No, I'm saying he
What did,
could have
what,
been.
what?
I'm saying he could have been, and he probably should have
Oh, but
been.
he wasn't. He wasn't. I mean, what does he do that's so bad in this movie? Like, I didn't see him in that way at all in this one.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is he should have been. He should have had some kind of flaw or character trait
Oh,
that
okay.
linked
But
all of the plot, all of the story together.
But as it stands, he doesn't, right?
Yeah, there's nothing really
Okay, sorry, I
driving the
just.
story forward, nothing to tie it
I
all
see what you mean.
together.
I think that's just about it for plot. I think we basically covered the story too, if you have anything you want to say on that, but I basically said everything I wanted to say in terms of Greg and Roderick. Do you have anything?
Yeah, I think I'm good.
Okay. So I think tone narrative tropes, the pacing was really good in this movie. At least I think. Ty has some differing views, I believe. But I thought the pacing was. I think it was great all the way out. I mean, it's an hour and 30. To be honest, it feels like it was like 40 minutes long. I think it always keeps itself moving. There are a couple of points in where if you don't appreciate what's going on, it's not really connected to the plot that much, and it's. And if you're not really invested in the characters, then it can seem pretty unimportant and kind of
Seem
boring,
pretty.
but.
Describe to me in what way the foot scene is important to the character development. Come on.
No, I don't mean. I mean, seem pretty boring, like, if you aren't really. Because, I don't know, I just don't see it that way. I thought that. I don't know, it just didn't come off as boring to me. Plus, it's not even that long. I mean, the foot sequence is like 2 minutes. Like,
True, but you can't
do
tell
we
me.
really?
You can't tell me the pacing is great when you have, like, a scene that useless that extends for 2 minutes. Come on.
I don't know. Do you have any? You want to talk about what you thought of the pacing?
Acceptable?
Nice. Okay. The tone is also very unified, as it was in the first film. I like how they actually shift away from like the school, How they kind of turn it more into Greg's home life, they're not it's not everything. It's like
I can agree
it's
with
school
that.
isn't the I like how they shifted it like back to his and you can definitely tell like in the first one it had a very like I don't know, just like this I don't know how to put it into words, but it felt very it feels very different tone-wise. From the first one, and I think that's mostly due to the fact that this one isn't set in a middle school.
I was done with the middle school stuff like about 30 minutes through the first movie, so I can agree strongly. Especially because like I guess subjectively, I just couldn't relate very much to the whole middle school dilemma stuff. Like even when I was interacting with other kids in clubs and stuff, like that was I've really never had that problem. But problems with my brother? Like I can relate to that strongly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's another thing. Relatability is another thing that can really, I don't know, kind of improve n not even the story, but make this a lot more appealing to audiences. But I think that's it. So the script and acting that so I think this is the right place to put it. But the ADR is pretty bad at some points. Like, if you see some point, if you see
Wait, hold
some
on.
parts,
ADR. Explain ADR to the rest of the audience.
It's like the connection of like the sound and the like what's actually going on. Sometimes
oh,
there's like
oh,
or something.
Oh, right. Yes. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. So at some points, like, there's like words being heard, but characters' mouths aren't moving.
Right, it was so disturbing and so unnerving. And like I was like, is my device lagging? What's going on here? Why
no,
is it
no,
out
it's
of
not
sync?
That. It was right there also. So some of the points where I saw it were the like when Greg was like, "Hey," no, when Riley was like, "Hey, Fregley." Hey, thanks, Fregley. That point that you could definitely tell there, and Greg saying, I think him saying, "Let's skate," after, you know, pulls the gum out of. What did you think of that too? Pulling the gum out of the pizza.
Oh man, I was almost ready to quit the movie when I saw that scene. I was like, yeah, nope, done.
Yeah. And also when he's like doing the magic trick at the roller rink, he says, "You don't want to give away your best tricks in public," and you hear like. I think in public, but you don't. It cuts to a new scene, and Greg is already like taking that magic stick or whatever this way from him. do you have anything about that? The script.
What's a script?
Oh, it's like a novel except for a movie.
Sounds boring. Nah.
Okay, so the music and visuals.
Oh my gosh! Yes. Yes.
Wait, okay, wait. Before we go on to that. The cinematography was used a lot better in this movie. I think that it was a lot better shot. And I saw, it's the same cinematographer. Oh, by the way, he also did the camera work on the Left Behind movie from 2014 with Nicolas Cage. But, I don't know if he was just having like, I don't know if he was just off those couple of months he did the first one, but it's definitely, the cinematography definitely has improved with this one. The licensed music is inserted a lot more tastefully, too. It's not nearly as distracting as it was in the first one. The first one, it's just, like, all this, like, these, like, random songs just appear at different points, and it's really distracting. Oh, and what did you think about the Heffley Family Beatles Band thing? Hello, world, hear the song that was
oh,
singing.
Gosh. Oh, I felt, I was so disturbed. I felt I was terrified.
That... Well, Ty, I believe that you have a family who can play instruments. Do you think we'll be getting the West Family Band?
I mean, we're basically the family choir at church at this point, so too late.
Okay, now we can go on to Loaded Diaper.
Yes! Oh, baby! Oh, yes! Jonathan, can you, in post-production, put in a clip of some of Loaded Diaper, the best, like, 20 seconds or something, and show...
Okay, right now.
And we're back.
You don't actually have to wait 20 seconds.
Dude, you can insert...
And we're back!
You can insert empty space.
I know. That's what I was telling you. I thought you were waiting 20 seconds.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, Explosive Diaper. Possibly one of the
exploded.
Greatest...
Exploded! It's not Exploded Diaper, Ty. How could you confuse
it? I am so sorry. I am so ashamed. Yes, that is probably what I would consider to be one of the greatest works of the 21st century. In music in general. So, some of the things I wanted to call attention to is the use of the descending chromatic bass motion and the major 4 to minor 4 chord progression. So, the use of the descending chromatic bass motion is really, really clever. It creates that comfortable, very gentle feeling. And wait, I'm reading the wrong script.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking that didn't quite sound right.
Oh, come on.
Imagine, though. Exploded Diaper as a ballad.
Well, they did say though. They did say that
I know.
They have a ballad, and I want to listen
to
that. Yeah,
Devil's Diaper.
Oh, that sounds so epic. I want to listen to that. No, could you imagine a rock and roll band playing a major four to minor four chord progression? Oh, jeez. And all the musicians in the audience screamed at me in anger. How dare you? But we're starting to get way too niche here. Anyway, so getting back to being serious. So the exploded diaper, one of the most important works of the 21st century. I was joking before about the chromatic bass pedal, but the instrumentation is on point. They use these really brilliant, totally cliche, horribly cliche chord progressions. Disgustingly cliche chord progressions that make you want to vomit when you hear them. And that's part of the genius. Have you ever listened to the Beatles' White Album? There were people who were very confused as to why the Beatles' White Album existed. I remember reading one critic claiming, why I couldn't understand it. Why did they make this? And then I realized it was because I had never heard anything like it before. That's how I feel about Exploded Diaper. I have never heard anything like it before. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I leave up to you.
You really have never heard anything like that before?
No, I have, but I'm being generous here.
Yeah, with lyrics, like, just to show you the musical brilliance and the... of Roderick and his band lyrics.
Yes!
Like exploded diaper in your face, and you told us that we were losers and we can't do nothing right. You said we'd never make it, but just look at us tonight. And
oh gosh.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. quick thoughts. Humor is on point, obviously. Oh, and one more thing. How did Chirag Gupta know what Holly Hills was going to wear so he could trick Greg into saying that he existed?
I just want to call attention to the fact that, for those who don't get it, there's a skit in the show where the Indian kid, Gupta, tricks Greg by dressing up in girls' clothing as his crush. And I just want to call attention to the fact that it is incredibly disturbing, if you think about it, that this dude went out and bought women's clothing for this joke. But, you know, okay.
Yeah. Fun fact also, Holly Hills' father, which you see a few times in the movie, is Jeff Kinney, the writer of the series.
Wait, repeat that?
You can see Holly Hills' father in a couple of scenes, and he's actually Jeff Kinney, the writer
really?
Of the series.
Huh.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to say about this movie is that song that is called Magic at the beginning with the roller rink.
Oh, whoa, whoa, it's bad copyright infringement, you know.
I feel like that song is, like, so representative of these kind of movies. And what I mean by these kind of movies are, like, those early to mid-2000s movies, like, Bedtime Stories, or, Ramona and Beezus, or all these, like, or, you know, just, like, all these, like, early, or Alvin and the Chipmunks is another one. These, like, early
2000s
movies.
Yu-Gi-Oh! The Dark Dimensions.
No. There's like early 2000s movies that are like about kids and like with like basically comedy stars and you know what kind of genre I'm talking about?
More or less, yeah, I know the era.
Yeah, I just feel like that's the song's been featured in a lot of those kind of movies. You know what I mean?
Much to my chagrin, because it's actually a good song and it doesn't deserve to be in these movies. But yeah,
yeah, okay. Yeah, that's all I had to say. Do you have anything for quick thoughts?
No.
Okay. So, Ty, final thoughts, and what would you rate this movie?
On the whole, I'm hesitant. This is one of the rare cases. Usually I describe my rating system in terms of enjoyment. 5 out of 10, you know, was mediocre. I really didn't have any strong feelings towards it. 6 out of 10, I liked it more than I disliked it. 5 out of 10, I disliked it more than I liked it, and so on and so forth. This is one of the rare cases where my enjoyment does not affect the quality of the film. I actually found this movie very amusing, but, like, critically rating it as a story, I do think is different. And generally speaking, I don't make that distinction, but the difference is huge enough to where I'd have to say, no, in terms of quality, this is bad enough to where it warrants enjoyment being less of a factor than it usually is. And so with that, I'd probably have to say 4 out of 10, actually. I enjoyed it as much as I would like a 7 out of 10 movie, but strictly speaking, in terms of quality, the more we talked about it, the more I found myself thinking, this really is not that good.
You know, I kind of agree with you in that I enjoy this movie so much, but talking about it like this has definitely, like, looking at it through this lens has definitely made me see a couple of the problems that I kind of overlooked just because it didn't seem that important to me on other watches. But, I don't know, I still feel there's some actual really good strong points in this movie, so I'm going to have to give it a 6.5. So do you want to just bump it up, give it a 5.5 out of 10?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so together, the Narrative Calculus podcast gives Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules, a 5.5 out of 10. Okay. Okay. Psalm 56. Be merciful to me, O God, for a man would swallow me up. Fighting all day he oppresses me. My enemies would hound me all day, for there are many who fight against me, O Most High. Whenever I am afraid, I will trust in you. In God I will praise his word. In God I put my trust. I will not fear. What can flesh do to me? All day they twist my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather together, they hide, they mark my steps, when they lie in wait for my life. Shall they escape by iniquity, and cast in anger cast down the peoples, O God? You number my wanderings, putting my tears into your bottle. Are they not in your book? When I cry out to you, then my enemies will turn back. This I know, because God is for me. In God I will praise his word. In the Lord I will praise his word. In God I put my trust. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? Vows made to you are binding upon me, O God. I will render praises to you, for you have delivered my soul from death. Have you not kept my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living? That concludes our Bible reading. If you enjoyed this episode of Narrative Calculus, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to leave a 5-star review down below and tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Be sure to also leave a couple to check out some of our other episodes, like our previous Diary of a Wimpy Kid one, or maybe our Captain Underpants episode.
Or if you're a masochist,
that will be your style.
If you're a masochist, watch Saving Christmas with Kirk Cameron, and then watch our review. if you really hate yourself, then do that.
And I'll see you on the next one. Bye, everyone.
See you around.